good morning. It is Jim Furno. He's the city manager of the city of Burlington. We're talking city business today. Our phone lines are open at 754-1490. And we're talking about anything and everything to do about the city. Again, city manager Jim Furno is joining us today. And to Jim, we say good morning, Jim.
And good morning back to you.
And again, it is a, it's February. The budgeting process is well underway right now.
And well, the caucus is well underway now, too.
Yeah, the caucus is, yes, well, that's another story altogether. And last week there was a meeting with the Friends of Cascade Bridge helping to support it, but also releasing, or I guess what, showing the latest or whatever information they had regarding the an engineering study. But I believe that engineering study was quite old, if I'm correct. Is that right? It's an interpretation of an older
So the Friends of Cascade are having their meeting tomorrow night at 6 down at F&M Bank.
Okay, what was the meeting at the library?
The meeting at last week down at the library was Impact 7G. We have a contract with them, with the city. And their whole purpose is a little bit different. They are not necessarily doing an engineering study either. They are presenting information from previous studies that have been done, taking time to listen to what folks have to say, that get input that they receive. At the meeting this last week, I think there were just shy of 100 folks who had attended. They got surveys from those individuals who are interested in filling them out. They got about 50 surveys, and I think they're asking questions about what's your preference in terms of, do you want to, given the context of what previous studies have talked about for what the potential cost would be to rehab the structure, what the potential ongoing maintenance operational cost would be with a rehab structure versus if you were to do a new bridge with its cost structure, it's just a little lower than what the previous studies had brought up for potential rehab cost, and the ongoing costs would be lower with that. For perspective sakes, the rehab, they were looking, the projections were in that 8 to 10 million, I think, range, and for a new construction, 3.5 to 5 million range.
It was about half price.
And then also looking at potential options for doing nothing or doing a straight demolition and then a replacement with potentially a more of a trail bridge, which is more in the $2 million range maybe.
Actually, what they were looking at is something considerably cheaper than that. They were looking at a thing at around $250,000, but they were looking at that was basically using a trail.
Yep.
Because of the nature of the beast, it would require obviously a buildup of a lot of they'd have to have some fill in there too, so that they would not have an incline or a decline, probably greater than a certain amount of percent. At least that's my guess. I'm trying to imagine what a trail would be like, but my guess is they would have to have, you'd have some barrier to keep you from fencing, to keep you from falling off of there. I don't know if that'd be the way it would be or not.
I'm not sure how they were presenting that part of that.
I didn't see it, and I don't know. But to me, a trail would indicate if you're going to go down a trail, it would have to be able to be navigable.
I don't think they were looking at this as being some trails are go to a handicap accessible standard to meet all ADA requirements. But given that, they're looking at what all the different options are that are out there. And to put some context, why would we hire a firm to do that after the studies that have already been done? It's really the historical nature of the bridge. It's on a register of National Register. The park itself is on a National Register, and the bridge is considered a
and archival
contributing of that historic nature. Anytime you go to have considerations of doing it, something that has the potential to alter that structure, that historic structure, you have to go through a pretty significant process to make sure that you you meet all the federal, state standards and guidelines for trying to do everything you can, best efforts to maintain historical integrity, or to somehow document, if you're doing something different, to document in some form or fashion the historic nature of that project, to do something to mitigate what any potential loss would be. In this, the process that Impact 7G is going through is making sure that everyone understands how all of those things interplay with each other.
Now, the other thing is, they and if I'm right, they said, no, there has been no recent engineering study done.
Correct.
So what we're doing is we're using, I guess, our best projection, our best guess based on what information we do have. Is that right?
Correct. And they've also worked with a couple of engineering firms that have done bridge work recently and just said ballpark.
Right.
When you're looking at it, not only do they want to look at what the old numbers were, but what's a ballpark for putting in a new bridge at this point? I know that has been part of this discussion to make sure that the projections that we have are in the same range, and that's part of the context of the information that they presented.
And I think the other thing is that Friends of Cascade Bridge, we had a couple of representatives, including a member, I believe, of Working Bridges,
mm-hmm.
That is trying to get, and the Friends of Cascade Bridge, they are trying to raise funds to provide an independent engineering study, a new independent engineering study
mm-hmm.
of the bridge. And, well, I think we brought that up with the council members when we were talking about that. And that is that, if we've got a privately funded organization, the city has no problem with having as many studies as possible. Is that right?
Yeah, and part of what the council, well, Working Bridges and the Friends of Cascade are doing a presentation tomorrow night, and part of that is giving an update on some of their cost projections for what they see for the potential to rehab, which is part of the dynamic of the discussions that we'll have to go on with the council as well. And I know the council will get an opportunity to see that information after that. As they put into context, they'll have to make sure that, I mean, one of the things that we have to do is also put into some what-if standards. What do attorneys buy into? If we're going to do a bridge and rehab to a standard that's part of a road system, we have to have it done in a way that the licensed engineer is buying off on, and that someone who's licensed in the state of Iowa is buying off on and certifying those standards, because somebody has to stand behind it in a format that we can protect our legal liability as well.
Right. The liability is liability.
It's huge.
Everything. It's everything, isn't it?
Yeah, and unfortunately in the world that we live in, if something happens, we end up on the receiving end of, we're supposed to be a backstop. And really, we have a public charge to be that backstop in a lot of ways. So we have to do our best efforts to do things in a way that is considered sound, and we can legally defend that we've done what's right by the community as a whole.
All right. It is a lot of other things to talk about. Cascade Bridge, there is no absolute planning date. I know it's not on the 5-year plan, but it would, I'm guessing, depending on this study, would that change where that bridge might be located in terms of, I guess, priorities?
Yeah, and really it's which route are you looking to go? A rehab versus a new construction versus a trail. They all have different kind of time frames that go with them. I mean, just from an approval process to what does it take for design efforts to make it happen. I know the Friends of Cascade Bridge, their approach is going to be completely different than the others.
Yeah.
And that would have its own timeline that would have to go through, too. And what standard it's hitting, I'm not sure, but because I haven't seen anything from it. But each of those is going to have a different cost, and depending on what those costs are and the times to get it to where you can get it done, then we can look at what's the affordability.
All right.
And I know that some of the options we have the affordability to make happen. I don't know that all of them we can meet happen in the timeline that people would like to see it happen in. Though.
So there's still a lot of unanswered questions that will need to be answered before any of those things can even be determined. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. We're talking with Jim Furno. We're going to take a break. We've got Jim with us today. And we're talking about city business. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Michael Braskowski, the voice of Southeastern Community College Basketball, and join me every Friday for Live with Blackhawk Nation, sponsored by Standard of Beaverdale, as we talk with the coaches, athletes, and others for an insider's view of the SEC athletics program. Hear the latest news regarding the teams at SEC. Hear Live with Blackhawk Nation every Friday at 7:22 in the morning and 5:25 in the evening on 99.3 and 1490 KBUR, and at 7:56 a.m. and 5:56 p.m. on Fox Sports 104.5 and 1360.
First impressions last. Time to call Sherwood Company.
These days, darkness falls early. It seems we live more of our life in the dark than we do in the daylight. Does your business light the way for your customers to find you?
First impressions last.
This is Jerry Sherwood from the Sherwood Company. A properly lighted sign can make all the difference this time of year. Does your business look open when customers drive by? Does the quality of your signage and business exterior convey the quality of product or service available inside? If your business signage doesn't shout, "Hello, come in, we are ready to do business with you," then it's time to call the Sherwood Company. First impressions can be the difference in the success or failure of your business. Make your first impression bright. At the Sherwood Company, we are design specialists. Designing ways to grow your business, designing first impressions that last.
First impressions last. Time to call Sherwood Company.
Let the fun begin with the all-new Fox Wednesday.
Yes!
It's TV's biggest competitions, The Masked Singer and the premiere of Lego Masters. TV's number one show is bigger than ever.
The Mad Singer!
Then, Lego Masters turns a global phenomenon.
Welcome to Lego Masters.
Into a high-stakes reality competition.
I am super stressed out.
Hosted by Will Arnett.
Get your brick on!
Grab the family for the premiere of Lego Masters.
Yes!
Right after The Masked Singer, Fox Tonight.
My son was playing in the finals, which I hated to miss, but I had a big deadline at work. Thanks to Total Wireless, my husband streamed the game to me over the nation's best network.
Yep, I'm your cameraman.
It was awesome.
Except for how tired my arms got.
Aw, thanks, babe.
You got this with Total Wireless. Get an unlimited plan for $25 a month, no contract. With a gig of high-speed data, than 2G, on the nation's best 4G LTE network. Total Wireless, total confidence. Available at Walmart. See terms and conditions at TotalWireless.com.
What you need is on sale now at Farm King. Get organized with 20% off in-stock Edsel shelving, $2 off a 15-gallon industrial storage tote, and 30% off Rapid storage items. Spruce up the kitchen with 15% off your choice of 6-quart KitchenAid mixers and $5 off a Hamilton Beach wide-slot chrome toaster. Farm King has the 50-pound bag of wild bird feed, $3 off, and $2 off a bag of performance bird feed. Don't forget the free hot dog and drink during Appreciation Days this Friday and Saturday at Farm King.
Jim Furno is our special guest. He joins us typically the first Wednesday of each month. Colin Letty is across the console, and Colin was at the meeting with the first meeting, about Cascade Bridge from, what was it,
Impact 7G,
okay. And so we were talking about Cascade Bridge. We're going to talk about a few other things. One of those issues, obviously, some things are going to have to wait. Cascade Bridge will be something up the road, but let's talk the city budget, and how are we looking in terms of dollars, cents, and money falling into place so far?
The council spent the month of January going through the budget. one of the a couple of the things that were primary goals was to can we stay at the same property tax levy and fund operations, and we can. The budget that's being brought forward, the council put their approval behind, an agreement behind, was one that stayed with the six. I think it's 1633 is our levy, maintaining that existing levy, maintaining the same level of service within the operating general operating fund. You know, the same level of police, fire, park and rec, library services that we've had in the past. They did make one addition to services in operationally down at the police department. Took an evidence tech position that's been a part-time position in the past and made that a full-time position, and hope, you know, with really a goal there to see some more continuity and a little bit more focused effort be able to go on with the way evidence tech, our evidence room is run. And we're able to do that within our existing dollars. We made some, you know, operationally before we got to a budget, we had to have a few cuts made from the departments before it was presented to the council, but we were able to do that without a sacrifice sacrifice to service. So as we move forward, we're maintaining operations essentially as is. When it comes to capital projects, we're not getting as much done as what we would like.
Now, I know one of the issues was being able to continue funding fire and police at the same level with the declining grants, I guess, falling
into
place.
Yeah, one of the big losses that we had funding for, you know, we added six firefighters 2.5 years ago, I think. Now,
right.
On a SAFER grant. That funding will end this next September or October. So going from having one at a peak, having about just shy of $400,000 coming in from a grant to this next year only having $50,000 projected to come in, and then the year after, that's a big transition in the budget. Now, one of the things that we had that occurred in the meantime, the state approved a new funding source, ground emergency medical transport, which is a supplemental funding mechanism to make up for Medicaid shortfalls, Medicare, Medicaid shortfalls for ambulance runs. We're looking at projecting that to have about a $400,000 new revenue stream this next year. The only problem that I see with that is we're projecting that to be about a $250,000 revenue stream this year, and we still haven't seen a payment. We may still see the full amount, but when you're having a new revenue stream, there's a little bit of risk there that if something doesn't fall into place and get everything going, we may have a significant issue in this next budget. But again, the structure is moving forward. Everything does seem to be happening, just not quite on a time frame that we had hoped. That funding stream, though, does make up for the loss of grant funding that we had. Without it, we would have been in a position where we were having to do some level of service cut somewhere.
I do know that there was a decision made during, I believe, the last council meeting regarding the senior center, which was on Jefferson. It had been planned to move that to the old depot.
And they decided against it, and they're going to stay where they are.
Right. I don't know. I guess that decision was based – had it been approved before but had not
– Correct. Okay. So, and you know, over the course of the last year or so, the council representative attends the senior center meetings had brought back – reports that the senior center was concerned about how they're making their funds work, the cost of that facility for them. We don't charge rent for them, but they do pay the utilities and for operating the senior center there, and that the cost on the utilities on that building is fairly high. It's a pretty spacious facility. And it was a concern and a strain on them from a financial perspective. And the council member was bringing back reports of their desire to look at what are some ways that we can reduce our costs. During that process, we were asked from several council members to look at different potential solutions for places where they could be. We don't have a tremendous amount of open space that the city owns. The places that really come to mind are the auditorium or the depot as alternative buildings that we do own, where there's some space that's unused. The auditorium, we have some unused space, but it's not really, it's cut up. There's not a good big area that you can use that doesn't then limit the ability of the auditorium to be run as a space where that you can rent out.
The banquet room area.
The banquet room is primarily where you're, and the kitchen area are things that get used.
And the kitchen area, I believe, at the depot in the quote unquote old, what would have been Greer's or could still be a Greer's diner, was just simply not large enough to accommodate. Is that right?
Well,
my
it depends on how you want to look at it. The senior center board went and took a look at it, and there was some hesitation from them, but then they had a vote that they decided they wanted to move forward they'd be interested in using that space. And as they looked at potentially using that space, the way that it would have worked, the Greer's Diner is not a huge space, but it does have a kitchen area. It has a seating area that can be used right in the diner proper, but they also had the ability to set up chairs and tables out in the great room, and given the usage of the way the great room is set up, those could be left up on a fairly permanent basis, and where events were held there. We don't hold a lot of events in the great room. If there is a spot where they needed to be taken down, that could be done. So there was an interest from the senior center board to look at that, and it would solve one of the issues that they had. And then the council moved ahead and approved that move to occur. And after that decision was made, the senior citizens group that meets at the senior center, I don't know what the evaluations that they had that went on within their membership, but they came to an ultimate decision that they really didn't want to be down there. They would prefer to stay where they were at. Then they had another vote
the reason, what was the principal reason why?
You would have to speak with them about that. I didn't attend their meetings. I don't know exactly. Right. I just know that they made a decision that they would really prefer to stay where they're at. Based off of that, the recommendation that our council representative then was bringing back to the council was, they don't desire to be down there. There's no need to move forward with this renovation of space for their needs if they don't want to be down there. And so now we're in a position where they're going to move forward with staying where they're at downtown. There's still a couple of things that will need to occur as we move forward. One will be marketing still the depot, the former Greer space, to see if we can't find a potential tenant for that. The senior center itself has a roof issue that we had budgeted to get repaired. We need to get moving forward with getting that replaced, evaluated to see if there aren't any other issues that come up with that roof as part of that process, and then move forward with replacement on it. And there's still an issue for the senior center in terms of the council had been also discussing what do we do with the informal parking passes that are down there. And there isn't a spot in any code section. There isn't a resolution allowing the informal passes to be used.
Signs.
So that's going to have to be something that the council addresses. How are we doing this? How are we proceeding with this? I think that might be on this next work session agenda.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We got a break for news. We'll be back with more. Jim Furno coming up in a few minutes.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Shay's Pub and Grill, featuring a full menu including seafood, steaks, chops, pub sandwiches, whole catfish, and appetizers, as well as nightly specials. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
And now a look at today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty.
Absentee voting in person is now available at the Des Moines County Courthouse for the upcoming 2020 Burlington School special election held on March 3rd. Voting begins Wednesday and ends Monday, March 2nd. Absentee request forms for ballots to be mailed can be printed from the Des Moines County website. You can also call the auditor's office to have a request form mailed. An absentee ballot request form must be completed and signed and returned to the auditor before a ballot can be mailed. The last day to request a ballot to be mailed is 5 p.m. on February 21st. Burlington police are warning residents of a new mail scam. According to a post on the BPD Facebook page, one resident received a letter and a fake check attempting to get one to send them photos of $2,100 in eBay cards. They warn residents not to cash the check. If it is not discovered to be fake by your bank, you could be responsible for the amount of the check. Police say they do not need to be called if you receive one of these letters, but they do advise destroying the letter. Police also say if you feel you have been a victim of the scam and suffered a financial loss, you are welcome to contact the police to report it. A Cedar Rapids nurse accused from taking painkillers from hospital patients' intravenous lines and injecting herself has pleaded guilty. The Gazette reports that 33-year-old Kelly Postal of Monticello entered pleas Tuesday in Cedar Rapids. Her sentencing hearing has yet to be scheduled. Prosecutors say Postal obtained an excess amount of fentanyl and morphine from the hospital pharmacy and administered patients as prescribed amounts and then injected herself while at work with the leftover drugs. Authorities also say Postal took fentanyl from a patient by using a syringe to withdraw it from an intravenous line and injected herself while still at work. With the first official MLB game at the Field of Dreams happening in Dyersville in August, Dubuque is preparing for the tourism and buzz that is sure to come with the game. Keith Ray, president and CEO of Travel Dubuque, said the tourism boom Dubuque will get from the game is incomparable to anything else. Out at the Field of Dreams site, construction is ahead of schedule. While there is still about 7 months until fans fill the field for the first official MLB game, lights for the game were put up during the past week. The rest of the construction on the stadium and field are set to start up again when the winter weather clears. The game will be played on August 13th between the Chicago White Sox and the New York Yankees. And those are today's headlines in the KBUR Newsroom. I'm Colin Letty.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi making news by tearing up her copy of President Trump's State of the Union address as he finished delivering it. She tells Fox,
"It was the courteous thing to do, considering the alternative."
Vice President Mike Pence tells Fox,
"I think it was a new low. I wasn't sure if she was ripping up the speech or ripping up the Constitution."
Republicans chanted four more years as the president stepped up to start speaking. He did not mention impeachment. The Senate trial ends today with the vote and not enough support to remove the president from office.
"This is a derangement, and it's threatening our republic. We would only make it worse by removing the president, even if they had proven the case."
Florida Republican Marco Rubio, Michael Bloomberg, says after the vote,
"The president will believe there's nothing he can't get away with."
Now, Michael Bloomberg has his first presidential endorsement in the Democrats' race from a governor. That's Gina Raimondo from Rhode Island. America's listening to Fox News.
Kelly O'Shea's isn't your average pub. Don't believe me? Well, there's nowhere else you can enjoy a friendly, high-energy environment while devouring mouth-watering, heartwarming pub and comfort food. Nowhere else has that same Irish authenticity and jaw-dropping lineup of on-tap specialty beers, liquors and coolers, and ice-cold drinks. And nowhere else can you enjoy the same daily and weekly specials like you can at Kelly O'Shea's. Not your average pub, not the average way. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
It's going to be a cloudy day through the day. We'll have a high of about 32 degrees this afternoon. A 50% chance of snow developing mainly after 3. And northeast winds at 10 to 15, less than a half an inch of snow possible. Cloudy tonight, though. Snow 70% likely. Low to 24. Could see an inch or two by morning. And northeast winds again, 10 to 15. Thursday, mostly cloudy. 30% chance of snow. High to 31. No accumulation. Right now, overcast skies. We're still at 27 degrees.
I'm Jessica Ettinger, CNBC. What coronavirus? Investors are optimistic and setting those fears aside. Disney reported earnings that knocked it out of the park after the closing bell last night. Shares of Disney are up almost 2% this morning. The Dow up 1%, up 280 points. The Nasdaq up more than 1%, up 103 points. The S&P is up 1%, up 31 points. The coronavirus has not yet become a major issue in the U.S. Experts say it is, a major issue in China. The domino effect will eventually impact U.S. companies. Apple's iPhones are made in China, and the coronavirus-linked labor shortage threatens iPhone production. The U.S. added 291,000 new jobs in the private sector last month, way beating expectations, according to ADP. And Macy's is closing 125 stores, while Sephora says it's opening 100 new stores this year. Jessica Ettinger.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. Subscription required. See website for full details and important safety information.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. You pay just $30 for a month's supply. And right now, get your first online doctor's visit totally free when you go to forhims.com/joy. That's right, free. Zero copay, no expensive appointments, no awkward face-to-face conversations to get your prescription. Hims connects you to doctors online who can evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe your ED medication. And a pharmacy sends it right to your door. Hims makes it affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To start your free online visit, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/joy. That's forhims.com/joy for your free online visit. forhims.com/joy.
We stand for people.
Farm Bureau works every day to create a vibrant future for agriculture, farm families, and our communities, benefiting Iowans from all walks of life, like Farm Bureau member Jeremy Atwood.
Growing up in high school, I was fortunate enough to receive the local county Farm Bureau scholarship that helped me in tuition costs when I went to Iowa State. We've doubled that scholarship and now offer two scholarships. Knowing that Farm Bureau is there and looks out for the interests of agriculture, I am very optimistic about the future of farming. Someday when my boys decide to return to the farm or help me in the farm, I know the Farm Bureau will still be there looking out for the best interests of the local farmer. Farm Bureau is a great leader when it comes to looking at all issues connected with rural agriculture in Iowa.
We're the Iowa Farm Bureau, a century strong and growing. To become a member, call your local county Farm Bureau today.
Everything you need to know and more on AM and FM. All your favorite programs and personalities with a cleaner, clearer signal and a larger nighttime coverage area. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
We're not going to let Steve Tyler start singing. It is Jim Furno who is with us.
Colin I'm not Letty. Singing either.
Colin Letty. Yes, a little classic Walk This Way with Aerosmith there. But again, Jim is joining us. We're talking about the bridge. We're talking about the depot. We're talking about a public building. You mentioned the auditorium. There was a talk at little past the middle of 2019, there had been a cost or at least a projection or a proposal to potentially put a hotel between the port building and the auditorium, and a group taking over the auditorium or purchasing the auditorium leasing the auditorium, I guess. And then doing some major work to the auditorium. Well, the hotel is sort of on the back burner. But the talk about the latest proposal, from my understanding, was to find a way to double or to try to double the actual size of the number of seats within the auditorium.
Not so much to double the number of seats, but they did talk about some projections of what they hoped with having the right group, the right set of partners involved in the process. Doing some reconfiguration of the auditorium itself, to enhance how concessions are done, et cetera. They've talked as they've gone through the process over the course of the last 6 months with the improvements that are going on with the Tiger Grant and the Great Places designation. Can we get a decent seating area outside on the east side that can be used, one that could potentially have other events that you could could enhance what's being done at the auditorium. So they're looking at a higher frequency of events, maybe a few more seats, but more so about how do we use this on a more frequent basis.
The format, the way the building is formatted, exhibit space, concession space, to make it look like a more modern building.
And to make sure that it gets used throughout the week for other events as well. And, you know, they're looking at who can they bring in as the right partners to be involved. They're certainly interested in having discussions with the folks who work at BRE. They're also looking at a couple of players that have a significant exposure across the country and I think even beyond our borders. So I didn't look them up.
But regardless of anything, we're looking at a fairly extensive project, aren't we?
For them, if they were to proceed with what they want to do, yes. You know, the group came in, the lead person that we were originally working with, Ryan Jensen, out of the Des Moines, came in with the idea of, I mean, his focal point really was about the hotel. But he understood that to have a hotel, because he's just rehabbed a facility up next to Vets Auditorium, a Fairfield Inn up there. He knows the power of having a good quality event center to make the numbers at a hotel work. He would like to see the ability to get a hotel down here. And that was really what brought him to the community to start looking at this. Well, he needed to have the auditorium involved as part of that discussion. He needed control of that. And how do you drive the numbers at the auditorium in a way that can make that hotel be successful?
And that is a complete remodel of the internal structure. And the obviously problematic area of that is that building is extremely, it's built like a battleship, really.
It is, and our staff will tell you that to do any changes in there may be a little bit more than what they may have projected in yet, as of yet. And that's part of why they're looking at. We needed a year. They needed a year extension.
An example, when there was talk about the potential to, because the audit, we're talking about when the Hotel Burlington was in the desire debate and all of the other things. One is there was talking about rehabbing and to return it to maybe not to a hotel but to an apartment, which it did. But the fact is that building is also built extremely thick walls and extremely solid construction, and it was going to cost over $2 million to take it down. And if it was going to cost over $2 million to take it down, then if you return it to an apartment building or return it to a structure which is a housing structure, or at least whether it's a hotel or an apartment building, you at least get around that. I think that they had some issues, obviously, the basement issues and the water issues that because of the flood. But beyond that, obviously the auditorium is even more solidly built than the hotel.
And I think that's a big point of contention with a lot of people, with the issue with the hotel, the auditorium. How much is all of this going to cost? And is it going to affect how much we're taxed and all that?
And we don't know. They are, and part of that is they aren't in a position to put an estimate on that. And I kind of get where they're coming from on that. But it makes it pretty difficult for the council to move forward.
It's kind of in the dream state right now, isn't it?
It still is. Need to look at, part of it that they need to look at what changes they'd like to see, put some cost estimates to that, but they also have to have a viable partner involved and have a partner that they think, can have an operating budget to make things happen in a way that can drive attendance at the auditorium, you know, and for them, their ultimate goal is to get a hotel.
And an engineer as well to make sure that it can be done.
But their ultimate goal is to get a hotel done. And so they really want to make sure they have the right arrangement with the right funding behind it, the right
okay.
to make it be successful so that they can get to their long-term vision.
The auditorium built in 1937, part of the Works Progress Administration off the Roosevelt administration. So it celebrated its 82nd birthday last year. So it's been around a long time. Was built originally as a training facility for the United States Navy. So all of that background in there,
So for council, as they've some of the decisions that they've made and what they will be making over this next month. You know, they'd had the original presentation that was made, and they approved a planning option agreement back in August. They just did an extension on that for an additional year. There's mixed support on council for moving forward. You've got folks who are pretty satisfied, really, with what BRE has done, but the majority are still interested in hearing. What is the alternative? And it's not.
How do you improve? How do you improve?
What would you see that could potentially happen that might be different? At the same time, we're moving forward with Burlington Riverfront Entertainment. Our agreement with them goes through next December 3rd, whatever the last day is,
okay.
31st. They came in and made a request for an extension of that, whether that was doing a new 2-year agreement or a new 6-year agreement.
Okay.
The council is willing to move forward on a 6-year agreement with them. Ultimately, it has a structure where BRE proposed with that 6-year agreement that they'd see the subsidy coming down. We currently are providing them $250,000 a year, and they're willing to talk about having that number come down to $200,000 and then stair-stepping down after 3 years to $175,000 annually. It would still have some level of protection in there for the council in terms of, I mean, the original contract that we did with them was written in a way that we could provide a 4-month notice that we're going to be moving in a different direction because the way our facilities are going, we have to approach them in a different perspective.
Lots of things to talk about. We're going to take another break. We'll be back with more Jim Furno.
The Iowa Hawkeye women travel to Purdue in another important Big Ten matchup. This Sunday afternoon, join Rob Brooks for all the excitement. Brought to you by K-Spine Community Credit Union, the Boogaloo and Fun City at Pizzazz, Barn Grover Glass, and by Courtesy Door. Iowa, Purdue, Women's Big Ten Basketball, Sunday afternoon at 12:45 on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR and KBUR.com.
Valentine's Day is right around the corner. Looking for a special way to celebrate your sweetheart? Get your tickets now for the Pizzazz Big Band Series Valentine's Day Soiree. February 14th, starting at 6 p.m. in the Pizzazz Event Center. Tickets are $80 per couple and include 2 surf and turf plated dinners and musical entertainment provided by the Bullis Rudder Band. Call 753-2946 for reservations or visit thepizzazz.com. Pizzazz, many destinations, one amazing place.
My name is Shambri Hagen, and I receive the best care at orthopedic specialists at Great River Medical Center. I've had 5 surgeries on my left ankle in about the past 8 years, and I just all of a sudden started having pain in the left ankle, and so from there on, it just didn't stop. It was just constant.
You traveled a distance for your final procedure.
I did make the 3-hour trip up to Burlington to Great River Medical Center to have this 5th surgery done by Dr. Goss. And instead of just coming up with a way to fix the problem, he wanted to get down to the root of what was causing it, what was going on exactly, and then make a plan from there.
Shambri, describe the success of your surgery.
I went back to Colorado to Rocky Mountain National Park, and I actually hiked around 30 miles in just 4 or 5 days. And to be able to go from not being able to hike 2 miles to having that experience was life-changing for me.
Orthopedic specialists at Great River Medical Center. Learn more at greatriverhealth.org.
If you've lost a loved one, you've experienced firsthand the difficulty of planning a funeral service in a fast time frame, on little sleep, and while you are grieving. At Ruth Thielen Funeral Home, our pre-arrangement specialists work with people to plan services before they are needed. There are 85 decisions that must be made for every funeral service, and all but one, the date, can be determined in advance. Call or stop by for a free guide to help you get started. Ruth Thielen Funeral Home, recognizing a life well lived and celebrating memories.
Jim Furno is joining us. He just mentioned the fact that we lost one of our employees. Yeah, John Billups was working for us. He's working a number of places. He's the mayor of the city of Burlington, passing the council proposal to, it was actually what, to increase the salaries for city council members, but not for the current city council members at this time. It's not until the next election.
After the next election, then it would adjust at all the council and mayor at that point moving forward.
And again, it would move the city council, I believe, from 500 to 750, and move the mayor from 600 to 833.
550.
Oh, is it 550 to 750?
Yeah. Okay. Well, 500 to 750, and it's the 550 for the mayor to...
Okay, to 833.
Well, if that's what it works out to, it's 10,000 a year.
Okay, regardless.
<Yeah.
laughs> And that is... and how does that compare? I guess the question is that comparable to what other counties or other cities of the size?
It all runs the gamut. I mean, you can find places that pay nothing to... it's either Cedar Falls or Waterloo has essentially a full-time mayor that's receiving $80,000 to $90,000 a year, but they don't have a city manager. Council Bluffs doesn't operate under a council manager type of government.
So they run everything.
Run everything.
We're comparing apples and oranges.
And you're going to find that the $500 figure that the council was at, you're going to find a lot of places that have that. You're going to find a lot of places that have $300. You're going to find a lot of places that have $700 to $800 a month.
Okay.
So it's not out of the realm. There is no rhyme or reason to it.
But it
really is.
But the idea was to encourage, or at least allow, more people that are working, particularly, or that because of the fact it is a lot of hours that have to be put in to be able to do the job, and that having some recompense or improvement in that, it just makes it a little bit easier, doesn't it? Is that the idea?
I mean, that was the approach that the council was taking when they brought it up. This is one that I'm very uncomfortable and stay out of the center on.
Okay, all right. No, okay, I understand.
What I can talk about is, though, that all the things that were being talked about, from this is something that's a completely volunteer position to something that should be highly compensated, you find all of those.
Okay. When does the budget have to be? When is the signed, sealed, delivered, and
not until the end
certified.
Of March? But,
okay.
But we have two hearings that are required to happen, and they required us to be done essentially with the budget process by now to make sure that we hit them.
All right, Jim Furno. Next work session is coming up. Is that right? Is that the next meeting?
Next week. Yep.
Okay, Jim Furno. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.